This is BFBS.
The Forces Station.
George Wedlake meets Blossoms.
To celebrate the release of the new number one album by Blossoms, album number 5 now, Gary, we're going to be catching up with the frontman, Tom Ogden. So keep listening and you'll find out exactly who Gary is, how they came up with the name, and if there's any truth in the rumours that they're supporting Oasis next summer. I'm George Wedlake and this is a BFBS Blossoms music special.
Station.
George Wedlake meets Blossoms.
I feel like it's probably the most comfortable we've been as a band. It feels the most us record, I suppose. I mean, calling your album Gary's quite, it could go two ways, couldn't it? People could be like, what are you doing? Or people could embrace it. And it feels like the latter. It feels like people are embracing it. And amongst the Blossoms camp, there's a bit of Gary fever going on. So yeah, it feels great. I mean, it's the most chilled I've been going into a record, put it that way.
Can we go back to the early days and how the story all started for you guys? So how and where did you all meet? Because it strikes me that you're all quite close friends.
Yeah, so I suppose the central relationship is me and Joe, the drummer. We've been best friends since we were like 12. You know, we went to watch Oasis at Heaton Park when we were 16, and our love for music bonded together when we were in our teens. We go to the indie clubs in Manchester and all that kind of stuff. And then we were in different bands growing up, like I was in a band with one of my other really close friends, and Joe was in, ended up in a band with Charlie, the bass player in Blossoms. And then that's how I kind of met Charlie. And then we kind of got to like 19 and I was writing different songs, been through my first relationship, first breakup. And it kind of felt like the songs were getting better and I wanted a change and I wanted something new. So then Joe was like, well, why don't you come and jam with me and Charlie? And then that was it, really. And then we kind of formed a Stockport supergroup of the people we knew in other bands. Like Josh was like 15 but amazing on the guitar, and we knew him through school, a lot younger than us, but we knew he was a great guitarist, and his band would support our old bands and stuff like that. And Miles, we used to go to parties at his flat, so I suppose that was the concoction. We all knew each other, And then we never looked back. Yeah, started it when we were like 19, 20. The thing about Blossoms, obviously we have different influences, but we were kind of more on the same page. Like our love for Oasis, Arctic Monkeys, ABBA, Fleetwood Mac, that was kind of, and The Doors, that was like the early thing we all agreed on.
Seeing Oasis, I'm guessing around 2009, Heaton Park. Yeah, what was that like? What was that like as a group of friends then? Was that like a coming together for you guys?
We went with a lot of people from school and it was definitely a coming of age. I remember going down, getting the bus from town to Heaton Park and just like nothing I'd ever experienced before. I'd never even been to a gig before that. And that was my first gig and the scale of it. We got a wristband to get in the front pit. Like we got there really early and all that. Like it was amazing. Yeah, it kind of changed my life forever anyway. Is it my imagination? Are the finding found something worth living for?
You're listening to BFBS, The Forces Station. It's George Wedlake meets Blossoms, a music special, and we're taking Tom Ogden back in time to when he saw Oasis at Heaton Park back in 2009. A very important experience that went on to shape the band.
BFBS, original music specials. George Wedlake meets Blossoms.
And then you go from that to putting together your debut album, Blossoms, which came out in 2016. How was that recording with, as you say, your friends, you and Joe? You've been together sort of like on and off since you were 12. You come together, you're producing an album together. What's that like?
I think at that point we just had tunnel vision on the band, and you know what I mean, the right people got involved. We had a manager, we had a record deal at that point. So once we got the record deal, we just never looked back, and it was like we still like that now, but we live literally like you living and breathing it, and you're just kind of thinking, I'm just going to do the best I can to make this the best it can be. So we all just lived and breathed it, really. So it just felt normal at the time, but we just used to rehearse all the time. I'd be writing songs all the time, and we'd be working on the new songs. And then when we felt like we had the ones ready, we'd go in the studio with James Skelly in Liverpool and record it. So great times recording that album. Like, we used to rehearse in a scaffolding yard, which was Charlie's granddad's. There was a room there, which we had for free, which was great for us. So we made all the songs in there, like jammed them. We'd then go to Liverpool and work on it with James Skelly. So just great memories. And we toured a lot at that time as well. We was on the road all the time. So I just remember being in and out of travel lodges on a splitter van. This is before we had like a proper like sleeper bus and stuff like that. So good times.
And to have it debut at number one as well, was that something you cared about at the time? Because a lot of people say chart positions are kind of taken with a pinch of salt, really.
Yeah, I mean, going into it, we never thought we'd get a number one. I suppose you only really realise once you get to the week, you know who's releasing, and the people in the industry have the stats of like, this is what we're projecting, that's a person's going to do and stuff. So we were like, our manager was like, hang on a minute, you might have a chance here. So once you know you've got a chance, then you care. Do you know what I mean? It's like anybody's competitive nature would kick in then. But like the months leading up to it, we weren't like, yeah, let's get a number one. But the week that once it became out, once it was out, we were like, right, yeah, we want this number one now. And we got it and it was great, yeah. But beyond our wildest dreams, really.
And to have a tune like Charlemagne as well off that debut album, almost like 10 years on now, I've seen you live, it's what you end on, and it always goes down an absolute storm. Did you ever picture that tune kind of taking the path that it has?
No, it's weird. Like, I wrote a couple of songs with that song. Often you'll write and you'll get maybe like two or three in a burst or whatever. And there was a B-side called Across the Moor, which was on probably the Charlemagne EP when we released it. And at the time, I remember being just as excited as both of the songs. And then we did a demo with Charlemagne, and our manager was like, that's your best tune you've done yet. I think it kind of took on a life of its own once you released it. Yeah, we knew it was good, but we didn't know it would like change our lives and become our kind of anthem. And I never finished it, if I'd have known that.
George Wedlake with a BFBS music special, and that's Charlemagne by Blossoms. We're catching up with Tom Ogden from the band now.
BFBS,
the Forces Station.
George Wedlake meets Blossoms.
When you've got to do a follow-up album, album number two after the first one, you know, skyrocketing straight to number one. Do you feel the pressure with that? You know, feeling that you've got to follow in the footsteps and he's got to do as well?
Yeah, I think I did feel the pressure then, to be honest, because it was that classic thing of we were on the road all the time. I didn't really have as much time to write. And I'm quite a solitary writer. So, I'd write at home at my mum and dad's house when I lived there for like hours and get all this time to do it. And then being on tour buses and dressing rooms and trying to catch a moment here and there, it just wasn't, I don't work that way. So listening back to it, it's probably my least favourite Blossoms record. Luckily, there was like two massive singles on there, two, like There's a Reason Why and I Can't Stand It were like really great songs. But for me personally, I think if I had enough time, more time, I could have made it better. But that's in hindsight, you can't really change anything. But I can hear the pressure on that record, personally. I wanna know, since you've been gone, have I been on your mind? 'Cause I know I was for a while. Late last night, I saw you out. For a moment I turned to stone. 'Cause there's still something only you see. Don't talk, out of wrong to kiss your mouth. Is it me, just a dream that never dies?
And then you followed that up with Foolish Loving Spaces, album number 3, which I have to say personally, I think is a genius record. I always think of it as your rubber soul when things started turning for you musically. That's what it sounds like anyway. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's definitely, I basically became obsessed with Talking Heads and it changed the game for me in terms of my writing. And Your Girlfriend especially is probably one of my favourite Blossoms tunes.
Sure. shop, but she likes all my favorite things. I know I shouldn't, but I'd like to spend more time with her. I wish she'd come over. I should read between those lines. And now your girlfriend is ringing in my ears again. I should be moving out, but can't, cause we've just signed a lease. My hands are shaking, the bedroom walls are paper thin. I heard her come over today.
You're listening to BFBS, the Forces Station. It's George Wedlake with you. We're chatting to Tom Ogden, frontman of the band Blossoms, all about the new album, Gary. We'll find out where that name came from. We'll also get an update on the Oasis support rumours as well for their tour next year. But now, we just played one of Tom's, and I quote, favourite Blossoms tunes. Let's find out why.
Yeah, that just felt like a rebirth in a way. It was like, that and Gary are my favourite Blossoms record. So, yeah, it was so much fun, that record. And I think I always feel pressure. You know, looking back, there was moments where even then I was like, oh God, what's it going to be like? But then I just wrote an awful lot, and I kind of got a bit more time back on that record in between touring. And I'd moved into a new house with my wife, not my wife at the time, a girlfriend, Katie. And basically the first room we sorted in the house was my back room to write in, basically. So that was kind of, yeah, I wrote a lot of songs for that record, which, similar to Gary, I wrote a hell of a lot for Gary, which I think, you need to write a lot to get the best ones out of it, is what I'm saying. But yeah, I love that record, Foolish Women's Faces.
For a lot of people, album number three, it can go one of two ways, can't it? It could be the album that we were talking about, Oasis, earlier. At the time, it was Be Here Now, their third album, wasn't it? And at the time, it sold well because people were expecting it to be like the first two, but it didn't quite go as far and didn't have the legs that the first two did. But for me, to produce the fan favourites when you see you live, like people, like you mentioned, your girlfriend, I've never seen a crowd just get going as much as you can after a couple of knocks of a cowbell. And then you've got, like, if you think this is real life, The Keeper, for me, that sounds like something straight out of the Paul McCartney piano playing handbook. Was that an influence for you as well?
Yeah, definitely. I wrote that on the piano that I got in my back room. That album's just full of great songs. Like, My Swimming Brain's a great tune. Oh No, I Think I'm In Love, like, Falling for Someone. Really proud of that record still.
I wonder. Let's spend this life as
My girlfriend in our house, we've got what we call the record wall. We put our favourite records of all time up there. Foolish Love in Spaces is just next to Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. So
wow.
We hold it in very high regard. Yeah, no, it's a great album. And what else were you listening to at the time then? Because with tunes like My Swimming Brain, I'm getting a tiny bit of a George Michael influence in there.
Maybe, yeah, I can't really. I'd seen a band in America, in New York, called Ceramic Animal. They influenced me a bit on that. They're not like very well known, but they kind of had some really cool guitar sounds, which kind of influenced me a little bit. And there's a little bit of Tame Impala in that song, maybe. Fleetwood Mac with the harmonies, definitely Fleetwood Mac on that record. Talking Heads was the main one.
And we can hardly disappoint Tom Ogden from the band Blossoms, can we? So let's have some Talking Heads now. Let's play the classic Once in a Lifetime on BFBS The Forces Station. It's a BFBS music special with Blossoms.
And you may find yourself living in a shotgun shack. And you may find yourself in another part of the world. And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself,
come for Christmas.
According to Tom from the band Blossoms, the Talking Heads were a massive influence over his band when they were putting together album number 3, Foolish Loving Spaces. Let's find out what happened shortly after that album entered the world.
BFBS, original music specials. George Wedlake meets Blossoms.
I think COVID kicked in, the pandemic happened shortly after that album came out, so it didn't really... You weren't able to just go out and tour it like most bands can straight away. So what was that like? Was the pandemic a frustrating time for you? Because you liked the album, you liked the tunes, but you never got to get people's reactions to them straight away, you know?
Yeah, we did like 2 weeks of the tour, and it was like meant to accumulate at the Manchester Arena, and then it got pulled and it was like, right, it went into lockdown, and then that album was kind of stopped in its tracks a little bit. We managed to do well in lockdown in terms of, we did like all them lockdown covers, if you remember. We did like an album, Blossoms in Isolation and stuff like that. And then I started writing Ribbon Around the Bomb in lockdown, which is, I think, why that album sounds like it does, because it's quite introspective and a bit, not darker, but more songwritery in a way. Yeah, it was a bit of a strange time. We got to finish the tour in 2021 for Foolish Loving Spaces and play the arena. So we did get to close that chapter, I suppose. But then it quite quickly was, we recorded the Ribbon Around the Bomb, then came out a few months after that, and then we went out on the road again at the end of that year. So
yeah, I saw you on the Ribbon Around the Bomb tour. What I liked about your live set was different to the others that I've seen you do, because you were linking the songs up. It was almost like you played one massive long track. So there's a lot of interludes there. So that live performance, was that something you really tried to sharpen around that period as well?
Yeah, we've always been conscious about improving live and taking bits from other bands live and artists and stuff like that. And yeah, I just hate it when you go to a gig and there's a really long silences and it's clunky. Like, I always was like, I want it to be like a DJ set and each song goes into the next. So we spend a lot of time in the rehearsal room tailoring it and getting it the way we want it, I suppose. We put a lot of effort into that stuff.
Yeah, when you hear the bands do like the awkward stage patter, and you can tell they're not comfortable doing it, it makes you uncomfortable in the crowd. But I've always thought you're really good at that. For example, there's one track on Ribbon Around the Bomb, Ode to NYC. I love the story that you tell about how and why that was written. Can you repeat that for us now?
Yeah, we got asked to write a song for a Netflix film. It's a soundtrack and a montage sequence for New York. And I wrote that song, sent it. They said they loved it, but then it didn't quite fit the bill for what they had in mind. So then we just had this song then. And then I love that tune, I suppose. It's not necessarily like you wouldn't like mosh around to it and jump around, but I think I really like the sentiment. I think it's a great tune. So yeah, we kind of loved it. So we put it on that record. But it was a reject from Netflix, basically.
You got a great song to use on the album, so you get the last laugh anyway.
Exactly, that's what we thought.
I'm wide awake, Empire State of Shock through my body. You can stay on Bleecker Street, Midtown, and on Broadway. A sea of pink in Central Park, formed from trees of blossom. The Bowery is divine in its own way, from top to bottom. The street fairs, Times Square's a kaleidoscope of colour. Skylines, my Valentine, I feel like a first-time lover. And so it seems it never sleeps, the subway is my haven. From 42, the Brooklyn Loops and Grand Central Station. Fall in love with New York City. Fall in love with New York City. World at your feet, the Lower East Side is where I'll go. We can meet on Rivington, Allen Street, just isn't home, you can forget Nevada. I get my kicks at West 56, we'll go sing Sinatra. Fall in love with New York City. 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 What if I Square park at sunset.
From album number 4 by Blossoms, Ribbon Around the Bomb, that's Ode to NYC, and you're listening to BFBS, the Forces Station. It's a Blossoms music special. We're building up to the big moment and finding out what Gary means. Where did that name come from for album number 5? But now let's quickly go back to the summer of 2024. It was quite a pivotal period for the band.
BFBS,
the Forces Station.
George Wedlake meets Blossoms.
I saw you put up the other day that the Withenshaw Park gig was one of the best you've ever done. Is that something you stand by, and what was so great about
100%. It? 100%. Definitely. It probably was our best ever gig to date. I think we'd, again, that live thing, we'd put so much effort into this show in terms of like making sure it was seamless, making sure there was enough moments to get people excited and put on a proper show, like a bit more theatrics. You know what I mean? Not quite panto, but once removed, if you know what I mean. Just so people can, just so it's more than a gig. I think you've got to stand out for the crowd, and we're interested in the theatre of playing live, and you're there to entertain people, aren't you? So we kind of put a lot of effort into it, and it paid off, really. And we had Gary there. He came out, which was a lot of fun. So I think it was just us being our most us, and people seemed to like it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, Gary comes on stage with you now. I was watching your transmit set on the telly the other day.
Yeah, depending on his on the stage height, Gary will be there. That's the what we're kind of governed by. But yeah, he's a good addition to the band, Gary. Brings something different.
Something else that was quite a spectacle as well was after you guys left the stage, appearing on your screens was a date in a certain Oasis kind of font and logo, and everybody started freaking out and panicking. Yeah. We now know this meant the Oasis reunion was happening. Did you know about it beforehand? Did you have anything to do with what was seen on the screen at the time?
No, I got a phone call 3 hours before we went on stage saying, by my manager, we've got to show this thing on screen at 10:35. Bang on. But I can't tell you what it is. And I was like, by this point, the rumours, the Times article had gone up. So the rumours were circulating. Yeah. And I kind of put two and two together and thought, got to be that Oasis thing. But he still wouldn't tell me because, as you can imagine, it was the best kept secret in the industry. So I didn't know, no. We came off stage and ran round to the front and had a look at the screen ourselves to see what it was.
Well, you mentioned like a pivotal moment for you guys in the early days, especially you and Joe, was watching Oasis at Heaton Park. Now this reunion's happening. I bet you guys are happy you're going to relive it, right?
100%. Like, I actually didn't think they'd get back together. So the fact they are is the band who you loved growing up, the reason I write songs, it kind of helps shape who you are as a person. They were that important to us, still are. So yeah, you can't really put it into words. It's massive. That day, it weirdly made me less nervous for Withenshaw with the rumours and stuff, because I thought, I felt like a kid again, weirdly, or I felt like a teenager, do you know what I mean?
How true are the reports then that you're going to be supporting them? Because some papers are saying...
Not true.
No?
Don't believe the papers. I've witnessed it firsthand, because nothing's been discussed. I've had no phone call. They've not even sorted out the supports, I don't think, yet. I think it'll be next year, so... No, they're not true. I've even had my brother messaging me going, someone at his girlfriend's work have said, they know someone in your crew and you're supporting. I was like, Ewan, I'm your brother. Like, I would know. I'm in the band. Yeah, the amount of people who've messaged me like, well done, mate. I'm like, mate, it's not happening. So, I mean, I'll cross my fingers and hopefully we get a call, but I'm not banking on it because, you know what I mean? It's up to them, isn't it? They could have whoever they want. There's going to be a long line of people who want to do that show. So my bags are packed, put it that way.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, would you, if asked? Because now I would say your firm headline. But your firm headline is in your own right. That's one band you would always go and support, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you?
Oh, God, yeah. That would be like a full circle moment. Especially for me and Joe, like, first band I ever saw. Like, if you'd have told me when I was 16 you could support Oasis, or you'd be in a band and you'd play to 30,000 people at Withenshaw Park, and then at the end of your gig they're going to tease their reunion back on stage. Like, that's insane. Like, I would not believe it. But
yeah,
strange things have happened, so.
They have. Well, apparently it's definitely happening anyway. I don't know if they've passed it on to you yet, but the paper
well,
is saying
it's news to me.
cause it don't stop raining. The sky all day is as black as night, but I'm not a complaining. I beg my doctor for one more line. He said, son, a word's family. It ain't no place to be killing time. I guess I'm just
You're listening to BFBS, the Forces Station. It's George Wedlake with you for a Blossoms music special. We're chatting to Tom from the band who just revealed, as things stand, they're not confirmed to be supporting Oasis, but his bags are packed. He wants to do it, so we'll have to wait and see. Now we're up to the point in the story where we're chatting about album number 5, Gary. It just went to number 1, but what was it like putting it together?
BFBS, the Forces Station.
George Wedlake meets Blossoms.
Do you know what? I'm still as hungry, don't get me wrong, but it felt it was probably the most difficult album to make in places, maybe my own personal headspace, because basically I opened a bar with my wife, Katie, and it all went wrong. It went like Grand Designs. Like, we had this building that needed a lot of work doing, and basically our lives became Grand Designs for 2 years. And trying to write a record in an episode of Grand Designs doesn't work. So it was in stages, really. Like, there was moments of brilliance, but then it would be like, oh, you're going plasterboarding for 2 weeks because we need to get this thing over the line. So, yeah, we worked with Jungle at the start of 2023 because we'd reached out to them. We wanted to work with somebody new, and we'd always worked with James Skelly from The Coral, and he suggested go and work with other people, like try something new. And we went in with Jungle, Josh. And I hadn't wrote enough songs, if that makes sense. So we did 5 songs in a week, worked really fast, but 2 of them were great, which was Nightclub and What Can I Say After I'm Sorry. And the other ones were to put it bluntly. And we'd paid for the songs. Do you know what I mean? We'd paid a lot of money to go and do it. We'd left Virgin at this point. We were doing the album on our own. And then we'd all got excited about it. And then a bit of perspective, and everyone around us went, whoa. This isn't the record yet. You need to write more songs. And I was still like I said, I get back from London and we'd be in hell at the bar, like trying to plasterboard, and water tanking was going wrong. Like, I won't bore you with it, but you can imagine it was crazy. So then I didn't really have enough time to immerse myself in the album writing process like you normally do. And it's quite a selfish process, really. You kind of got to look inwards and be quite always on it. And I couldn't, but I then wrote Gary a few months later, and that was kind of another moment which felt like, okay, that's something. And then we wrote with CMAT over the summer. And then that kind of, them three things, the Jungle, Gary, and the CMAT influence, then kind of give us the kick up the backside to go, right, you got enough here to see it over the line. And then, it just kind of went, after we worked with CMAT in the summer, like we rented an Airbnb in Anglesey, the band and her, and we had like a writing lockdown, and it was really great, no distractions. Cold water swimming in the sea in the morning. Then we went and wrote songs. It was like, it felt like an injection into the band that we needed, if you know what I mean.
She's a great songwriter, isn't she? See, Matt,
what
was it like working
with her?
Oh, she's
insane, yeah. Yeah, it's eye-opening and inspiring. Like, literally a force of nature. I haven't got enough great things to say about her as a songwriter.
Phones and glasses scattered around the club. I put my jumper. Brand, but
she really helped me personally, like, give me the confidence I needed to kind of think, no, you can do this, and, you know, show me some other ways of writing and different stuff like that. And then after working with her, the opening track, Big Star, which I wrote at the end of the year, kind of gave me the influence of, like, anything can be a song. Like, you've just got to, she always likes to laser focus of what the song's about. And that Big Star thing was, like, me in a hotel in LA debating going over to this, like, famous journalist, basically. And I bottled it. As it was happening to me, I thought, oh, this could be a song. And I felt like that's what Kira would have done. She'd be, like, writing about that immediately. And that's what I did. And came back and wrote that song. And then Mothers, which is another great song. And we kind of, yeah, we got there in the end. And I think all the setbacks made it a better album. And weirdly, became a similar process to Fully Summing Spaces in terms of we wrote a load of songs, if you know what I mean. That was the process, basically.
Yeah, so you're working with Jungle, you're writing with C-Mat, James Skelly's producing it again with you, you're working with all this talent, and then you're also working with Sean Dyche as well. How did that come about?
Yeah, Sean Dyche was a mad one. We met him through Rick Astley, and he was already, he'd heard of us and seen us at the Isle of Wight, but obviously we were friends with Rick, and we met him at a Rick Astley concert at the arena, and stayed in touch, and then thought, why not, let's ask him to be in the video, and he said, yeah, great guy.
Yeah, he comes across that way as well. But I've just found the whole marketing around this album special as well, because you set up a phone line, didn't you, where fans could call this number and get voice recordings of yourself and the boys talking about the different tracks and snippets of each song as well. Where did that idea come from? Because that, to me, just seems like nobody's doing that anymore.
Yeah, we sat, you know, we've been working with The Orchard, who are like a distribution label. So we have got a team around us as well, but we kind of sat down all together and was thinking of stuff. And just hashed out a load of ideas. And we already had Gary. We'd bought our own Gary because I was like, we need to get him because we can take him on tour. We can use him for the album. We can use him in promo. It'll be worth it. So then we had the idea of driving him around, playing the album. And then we thought, no, why don't we put a phone number on there and he can listen to snippets of the song. It was just all our ideas, really. Just from just like, we wanted to do, excuse the pun, guerrilla marketing and do things a bit more old school in a way. A bit more, yeah. Somewhat tangible, not just online. It was like, oh, I've seen it, I'll ring the number, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I know the story, but for people that don't know, who are listening to this thinking, they've named an album after an 8-foot fiberglass gorilla called Gary, why? What is the answer to that?
The answer is, why not? I suppose I wrote that song, tongue-in-cheek, having a bit of fun. The song turned out quite well. And it went on the pile of good songs for the album. And then when it comes to naming an album, you're looking for things to pull it together. We tried a few more serious titles and it just didn't work. Like, it just didn't feel right. And the last album, Ribbon Around the Bomb, felt quite a serious title and had like deeper meanings and stuff. And I feel like this is just the antithesis of that, maybe. I'm only realising this now I'm talking to you, but I think I just liked the idea of it being really simple and just Gary. Similar to the whole Brat thing, like why is Charlie XCX called it Brat? She probably just thought, I want it to just be, it's that kind of thought process of being, thinking outside the box a little bit and not conforming to what you think it should be. I don't know, I kind of just thought it was funny and just thought, why not? I just went with my gut, really.
It's always best to do that. There's kind of a Ballad of Darren kind of thing going on there as well. These kind of traditional names creeping back into
yeah,
to
I
cool
never,
culture.
I knew songs from that record. Like, I loved The Narcissist and stuff, but I never did put two and two together. It's only recently people have been, oh, they've probably been inspired by the Ballad of Darren. I was like, oh no, it was Gary the Gorilla, actually. It's not even a real person.
But as you probably heard, the name Gary over the years has been in decline. It's dying out. Do you think this album is good enough to bring the name Gary back? Are people now going to be calling their kids yes. Gary after listening to this album?
I reckon there'll be at least one. That wet night, Mr. Scott hasn't seen him since. It seemed to be well planned from the footage they have, but they can't see who actually took him. Help us get him back where he belongs as the police respond. Won't you keep an eye out for Gary? He's 8 foot tall with a fiberglass heart, also known as Gary. Registration plate, his movements they were able to track. What you see comes from a fairly extended family. Don't know how many brothers he has. Help us get him back where he belongs as the police respond. Won't you keep an eye out for Gary? He's 8 foot tall.
BFBS Original Music Specials.
On air, online, on the app, on FM, and DAB Plus throughout the UK. This is BFBS. BFBS. The Forces Station.